T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The Bears made the deal we thought they were going to make. They didn't get much for Jordan Howard, but they finally traded Jordan Howard. That went down as we were watching everything yesterday, right in the middle of our college basketball fun. That crosses. I hear feet coming down the stairs, and my kid got some alert on his phone, and he's like, "Bears just traded Jordan Howard." And I see it, Craig. He got actually before it the Schefter tweet was finally like retweeted.
Who is he connected to?
I don't know.
Who's he following?
I don't know. He gets these.
Is he on Twitch or something?
I don't know.
Watching Kyle Long,
probably. But he gets these alerts, and he's like, "I said, what?" He goes, "Conditional pick, 6th could be a 5th." All right, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay.
All set and fine. I'm glad they got something for him. To me, the takeaway is Matt Nagy is powerful. Matt Nagy doesn't want to play this guy. He doesn't fit. And he said to his boss, "Can I get something else? I don't want spaghetti for dinner. I want chicken nuggets for dinner. I don't like spaghetti.
I want chicken nuggets.
Yeah, I don't want Jordan Howard." And he's like, "Okay, great." And that's the end of that.
The executive of the year and the coach of the year have now put themselves out there. That's my takeaway, is that you've got two guys awarded for their performance last season, and they said, "No, we're good on Jordan Howard," despite his first 2 years in the league. They said, "Now we're fine. We can find something else. We found Jordan Howard in the 5th. We've got a 5th-round pick. We will use it to find the next guy that matters just a little bit." I wasn't surprised they traded him. I was surprised that they were good with the 6th rounder that could conditionally turn into the 5th round pick.
That's an indication of the market, or lack thereof. I don't think there's anything there.
Well, I think it's an indication of the leverage. I don't think it's necessarily an indication of the player, because I think there are enough offenses that would love to, enough being like 5, 6, maybe 7, not like a,
when I say the market, I mean
the league or anything.
I mean the dynamic market. I mean all of it. I mean, I'm factoring in all of it.
Yeah, because the Bears didn't have leverage here.
Right.
I mean, everybody knew that they wanted to put this guy out there. Matt Nagy sauntered down into the coaches' meetings, the coaches' breakfast, and had himself a mimosa and told everybody, "We're good. We can move him if we need to move him. We're into making trades. We're on this now."
Well, you hear rumors about guys, and yeah, we jump right on those when we hear rumors. Ryan's already dialing. Now, I love how you think that he was a little lubricated.
It sounded like he was very calm. That's all I'm saying. I don't mean to say he was off base. Just sounds like he was easygoing.
What they could have done was they could have said, "Let's wait into training camp. Let's go through all our stuff. And then somebody's going to get hurt. And there's going to be a crisis, and then all of a sudden he's going to increase in value, and maybe." But what I figured was they would rather, and this is part of it too, Nagy would rather get on with it. I think Nagy says, "Look, if we're going to do our OTAs and all of our rookie installations and try to," he's so excited to get to the next level of install that he didn't want a vestigial piece there. And I think you may have traded him for a little bit less now, but maybe you're closer to winning a championship.
I think you just gave the answer to the question a lot of Bears fans have asked, and a lot of those analyzing the systems that both Chicago and Philadelphia run. This is from the 847. He puts the question perfectly. If Jordan Howard wasn't a fit with the Bears and Philadelphia runs the same kind of offense, how is he a fit in Philadelphia? I think the answer to that is, essentially, Matt Nagy wanted to get on with it. Ryan Pace was ready to go with Matt Nagy's choice for whatever running back was next. They were ready to just move on and get that next running back in the draft, work Mike Davis into whatever they think Mike Davis can do, let Tariq Cohen do his job the way he's been doing it. And let's not forget, Cordarrelle Patterson is a really interesting piece in this offense. And as much as, you know, you and I kind of had to go through this adjustment phase in the first couple weeks of the season, you know, registering more lateral passes as runs, you know, de facto runs. Some swing stuff is de facto runs. You know,
yeah, those, changing the aesthetic.
Cordarrelle Patterson will catch, I would imagine he's going to catch a lot of those de facto run passes. You know, that's a guy that they chalk up as essentially run plays and essentially dangerous kind of stuff, but also is a running back, more or less.
Yes and no.
I mean, it's yes and no, but that's how this offense works. That's how they try and work the run game. It's a yes and no kind of run game. Matt Nagy told you, they're not giving the ball 25 or 35 times to one guy. That guy doesn't exist on
especially
that roster.
Especially not a guy who's 5'6".
Look, Jordan Howard had his worst season, and the Bears went 12-4. I don't need to give you that kind of answers things. The Bears went 12-4. They had one of their best seasons in recent memory. Jordan Howard had his worst, and your Ryan Pace and your Matt Nagy decided, we're good.
Yeah,
we can move on.
Howard was great in awful offenses that didn't score. And I would rather have somebody different in a better offense that does score. 24 points a game. That's what we need.
Yeah, that's the average. Right? That's where you're headed.
This is Bill in Barrington on Sports Radio 670.
Boys, you know, I would summarize what you guys just talked about by saying that Coach Nagy has become the coach for the Bears. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool having a guy who is really, you know, running a program that looks to be working very well. So
he knows what he wants.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for talking about that, but that's not why I called. What I wanted to ask you guys about, because I'm really entertained by you two guys sort of like analyzing the Cubs, and because you got, you know, Theo literally on the radio station telling you guys stuff that's going on, you know, it's like he's using you guys as a mouthpiece, but it's great because as fans, we're hearing all this great stuff that is actually going on, and then you guys just analyze it, and it's really, really great. So even though, I mean, I kind of feel weird that I'm thinking the score is a mouthpiece for a franchise in Chicago, it's kind of like working out for everybody really, really great. And I'll hang up and listen to you, but I just wonder what you guys thought about it.
I guess the term mouthpiece has a pejorative overtone to it. Mouthpiece, generally, when you refer to media as a mouthpiece, it's saying that they're going to carry water for an organization, that they're always going to have their side.
They've got strings being pulled.
Right, or say being told what to say. But, here's the thing.
But you guys don't do that.
Correct.
You guys say what you want. I mean, analyze it. It's great. It's hilarious. Well, you guys make me laugh.
But that's because both Theo and Jed are able to, they're stand-up guys who represent themselves. They don't hide from anything. They don't ask for any help from anybody because they don't need it. And like Theo was asked about it one time. He said, why are you so good at handling some of the PR stuff? And he said, it's just talking. It's not that hard.
Yeah, it's also a front office that has become, it's more common for front offices in baseball to embrace difference of opinion from within now than it probably was, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago. That's a little outside my depth, so maybe it's a little bit more hyperbolic than it needs to be, but that's kind of the pace for me. I think that's a front office that goes in. I mean, listen, that's the story about Theo Epstein. He walked into that Boston Red Sox front office and said, we don't know anything. Then asked for everybody's opinion, then built something out of it. Built something out of his own convictions, too. So I think when you've got, you know, some stated stances, some pretty clear and obvious drive from the front office, they don't care if somebody thinks the other way around it. I think they consider it instead, unless it's, you know, me.
Yeah, I'm
well,
making
I don't need to be considered. That's fine.
And I've been making fun of Theo by, you know, calling him Bob from Elmwood Park because, you know, I'm still trying to figure out the whole urgency thing. And I think there are people within the organization that are trying to figure it out too. We could see it this very first weekend against a terrible Texas team. We could see them win. Here's your Sunday. Now what? Now, how are you getting after it? What are you doing? How is Vegas operating when your lineup comes out? How are you managing your even or ahead guys in the bullpen? Hell, I don't know if Joe knows who his even or ahead guys are, his high leverage, mid leverage guys. Yeah, it takes time.
I would imagine
he
knows who he would like for them to be. But yeah, I mean, you've got to figure out how people are pitching and what early weather does to you, all that weird stuff.
Because I always compare Joe's circle of trust in his bullpen as shrinking like the Fortnite storm.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until it's Jesse Chavez.
Well, remember, just Jesse Chavez. It was
pretty much
Cishek and then just Jesse Chavez.
Pretty much what it was last year.
Well, the hope is, Theo mentioned it yesterday. It was yesterday, right? Yeah, yesterday, that you know, they used 50 pitchers last season. And even if they had guys, you know, come in and throw like Allen Webster or whatever, come in and throw innings that weren't inside what you would deem a circle of trust, those innings still mattered. Because, you know, don't forget that this rotation, last year's rotation, with Chatwood starting, with Yu Darvish making bad starts, with some scuffling beginnings of the year to Jose Quintana, that was on pace to be one of the worst starting rotations in franchise history. That's they were not good to start the year. And Joe used the bullpen, and the front office used the bullpen adeptly to get themselves out of a whole lot of trouble. And the offense didn't hurt either. You're mashing the ball at that point. But that sort of depth matters, not as much as who you're using in high leverage situations against Christian Yelich when he is just human and not superhuman like he was the last 6 weeks.
He hit a home run yesterday too, if you're paying attention there.
Here's the other thing about that Brewers outfield. They play defense.
Do you see how the game ended?
Lorenzo Cain at 30 plus in center field. They had to go out over their skis to trust a 30 plus year old to play elite center field defense and hit. And then Lorenzo Cain goes out last year and has maybe the best year of his career. That catch he made yesterday was a perfect route. He knew exactly where to shave the thing off, find the wall, play the angle, take it back over the top.
And it looked like they were already celebrating in the Cardinals' bullpen because they saw the trajectory of the ball.
And
everybody thought it was gone except Lorenzo Cain, who from the moment he did his little reverse pivot,
yep, third step maybe,
knew that he was going to reel that thing in. And Hader's look is like, yes, sir, thank you. I was comparing the look from Hader with the look of the Purdue assistant coaches when they saw that the screen was going to work for Harms to roll to the basket.
Sure.
I love stuff like that. And Painter's a really good coach, too, but that was just a great little basketball.
He is kind of fun. Later, I got to ask you about the whole Rick Barnes decision to advance the basketball so that his team has just 0.1 seconds left, because I've watched a lot of college.
They changed it.
Oh, no. They was just 0.1.
No, they added.
They were going to, but they didn't. They talked about it for a while. They said, no, this is when, because Barnes is doing whatever with his hands.
And they change it back, right?
Yeah. And then they go, no, but it's when we recognize the timeout. To which I got to wonder, why is Rick Barnes standing in the middle of nowhere and not holding a referee screaming timeout into his ear when he needs to?
It's not football. I don't think you can do it that way.
Why not?
I don't think you can say, hey, consider the timeout already called.
I'm saying Rick Barnes should have actually put a hand on the referee's belt and held him close.
There's a lag.
Held him close like a lover and told him the timeout comes now.
Right. Their point was that lag counts. The recognition of the timeout. You don't automatically get to say, as the moment he catches it, consider the timeout called. The NFL kind of does that.
So
the NFL, they let him fudge it a little bit.
So then Rick probably shouldn't have run two passes and maybe run a play to get himself a shot with 1.7 left.
I hadn't seen it before. You run that little Valpo thing. You run the staggered double curl to shooty guy.
Yeah, but they didn't even. They just had one guy sprinting to free throw line extended for that first pass.
Correct, but I'm saying you can. There are plays you can run.
Oh, I see what you mean.
To get a good desperation shot. It's not a great shot. But you can get yourself a reasonable, maybe NBA distance
better
three.
Than chucking it over the back of your shoulder without looking at the hoop.
Pat in Tuscaloosa is on the score.
How's it going, guys?
What up, Pat?
Hi, Pat.
You know, with Jordan Howard, the Bears had one of the most predictable offenses in football, okay? When he was on the field, it was an indication to the defense that he was either running up the middle or he was pass blocking. I'm super excited to see Nagy finally be able to pick his own style of running back. Also, one underrated part of this trade is that it takes the Eagles out of the market for Josh Jacobs and Damian Harris. Roll damn tie.
It'd be a call from Pat without without the obligatory perfunctory punctuation that he provides.
It's interesting he brings up that Nagy gets to pick his own style of offense because I think many had said, or many would wonder whether Howard got enough carries. You know, this idea that you and I went back and forth about the running back that needs to get a lather up, the idea that you need a couple of carries before you get the quality carries out of a guy.
Oh, he'll be good soon. He's got to be bad, and then he gets good.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wait till December, then he's going to be fine.
I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if that's a thing in the NFL anymore. I don't. I think it's only anecdotal. I don't even know whether it's provable.
I don't buy it. I don't buy the whole thing. It's like, well, and then the weather gets bad, and then he becomes not as slow, or he doesn't fall
or
down
everyone
as
else
much.
Gets right, when it, slow.
When it's
when
cold,
was it
he doesn't.
That Harrison Smith got absolutely lost trying to find Jordan Howard, but not because Jordan Howard put the burst of speed on him or the wiggle or anything. It was because Harrison thought he was going to be over here, and he was 6 yards late.
He was a changeup.
He was a human changeup.
It was the human changeup. Running is upsetting timing. Or something.
And hitting is something else. Howard was sixth in the NFL in rushing attempts last year. It's not as though he didn't have some consecutively, if you want to argue that, fine. He was sixth in attempts and 39th in yards per attempt. That's not the same guy as he was the first two seasons. It's just not.
We have the Midday Midway coming up after a brief timeout. Esquire magazine has ranked the 10 best baseball movies of all time. And
we're going to fight.
We can quibble or not. We can fight or not. I think the battle lines have been drawn on some of these. I also will need a ruling from the I'm Fat podcast on a criminal who might not have lived up to expectations. And I've got a lawsuit with some details in which I never thought I would read.
We're going to talk pancakes. Oh. We're going to talk farting. We're going to talk two things there.
Sweet.
Two separate stories. The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
On the first portion of this Bernstein and McKnight show, we talked about opening day in baseball. Looked at the Cubs making sure that launch angle indeed is not a fad.
They like that.
Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein making sure that October is starting in March or April or whenever he says, and they play with the urgency. I think the ball might be tightly wound again.
They hit the same number of home runs last opening day, Dan.
Yeah, but looking around the league.
Did the Dodgers not hit 8 last year?
There were a lot of balls that off the bat I thought, okay, that's a routine out. Oh, wait, it's a home run. So I'm not declaring a baseball conspiracy yet. I'm just deputizing you. I just want you to be on the lookout for odd things. Maybe we'll talk to Jonah Carey about that a little bit later on also. And also discuss what it means that the Bears finally moved Jordan Howard and that they're getting on with it. They're done with it. It's enough. Or they're going to do something else. They're going to get more guys who can run.
I can make you a cool $19,000. Are you interested?
$19,000.
Yeah. There comes with some qualifications. You have to be particularly qualified for this. A study commissioned by NASA and the European Space Agency being conducted at the German Aerospace Center needs German-speaking, non-smoking women ages 22 to 55. So, to those of our listeners who are between 22 and 55, female and German-speaking, you have a chance to get $19,000. Oh, yeah, you're non-smoking. You can't actually be smoking either. No parts of you can be smoking.
Like on fire?
No, can't do that. The job is to lie in bed for 60 days in order to help understand the impact of weightlessness on the body. In space, muscles and bones deteriorate.
And no one can hear you scream.
No one can hear you scream. Researchers are hoping to simulate that effect by having subjects stay in bed for a continuous amount of time. You can get bodily functions measured. You can get all that kind of like height decreases and all that kind of stuff. They are, however,
it gets you on the Kyler Murray thing eventually.
They are going to feed you. A team of nutritionists will curate the meal so that participants do not gain weight and have all the nutrients they need. However, the German Aerospace Center says on the website that the meals are not extra healthy and there will sometimes be pancakes or other sweet treats. So
there might be pancakes.
$19,000 if you're a female between 22 and 55 and do not smoke and speak German, I've got the job for you.
Need a ruling on this one, Jay. Dateline Elmira, New York. It appears an upstate New York man was not hungry when people say he stole a Little Debbie delivery truck. Police say 38-year-old Joseph Taco of Elmira, T-O-C-C-O.
His name is Taco.
Swiped the truck Monday from a loading dock. Police stopped it a short time later. He said that police say Taco told them that he took the truck to visit relatives and friends. It did not appear any of the snacks were missing. So he's charged with possession of stolen property. He is being held in jail pending an arraignment. My belief is if you are going to steal a Little Debbie delivery truck, what's the point if you don't have yourself a little party back there, right?
Yeah, you've got to at least take some Swiss cake rolls or oatmeal cream pies and make it worth your time.
Nutty bars. We're having a Little Debbie draft. I was never a big, not big in my upbringing, but I would trade for the nutty bars every once in a while.
Well, I stashed went to Aldi last week, stashed a box of oatmeal cream pies under my car seat. the family couldn't steal them. And Hope got in a car this week and said, "What is... do you have a box of oatmeal cream pies under the car seat?"
No.
I said, "Aww. I did. I don't anymore. Now it's empty."
I think that's admitting you have a problem when
you stashed the whole box under the car seat.
You saved a boxy in the car.
It lasted 2 weeks.
Now, I have a question. Because the box is it's a long rectangle, right? They didn't change the packaging on the oatmeal?
Yes, it's a sports utility vehicle.
Okay, so if you eat the first, you're deeper into the box with each sweet treat you have. What that does, Jay, is it negates oatmeal cream pie while driving because you can't reach all the way back into the box. I assume you're a veteran, I'm fat, that you've solved this problem.
Yeah, you just slam on the brakes.
And it brings the cakes to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
it's brilliant. We've lost a lawsuit. We, as a people, have lost a lawsuit, and it needs to go to the highest courts. An Australian appeals court on Friday dismissed a bullying case brought by an engineer who accused his former supervisor of repeatedly breaking wind toward him. The Victoria State Court of Appeal upheld a Supreme Court judge ruling that even if engineer David Hinkst's allegations were true, flatulence does not necessarily constitute bullying. Hinkst had a boss who was continually entering a very small and enclosed workspace and then farting in the enclosed workspace and then leaving. Some would call it a more aggressive form of crop dusting, but this is more like just daisy cutter in the office. I mean, this is just a... He was seeking $1.8 million Australian dollars.
I don't think that should be thrown out on its face like that.
It has been it's been dismissed.
I'm glad the precedent has been set because as they're hearing this, my children would be retaining lawyers as we speak.
You crop dust for fun?
Well, no.
Just kind of let them know you're around?
Well, you gotta
dad home?
You have to establish your territory sometimes. You know,
get up marking territory.
My house.
I didn't realize that the official legal way to describe this act would be breaking wind toward someone. I was unaware.
That's more directional, but it's...
I thought you farted in a general direction.
I can only think of Monty Python in this. I fart in your general direction.
That's what I thought this would be.
Well, now we know that they could have attempted to bring him up.
They should go to the highest of courts.
The medieval court. As we speak of movies, here is from Esquire magazine, the 10 best baseball movies of all time to celebrate opening day. Quibble as you see fit.
Oh, there will be quibbles.
I will do so. Number 10 is 8 Men Out. Great guy, never met him.
It's a fine movie. It's just not much of it's true.
It's all false, pretty much.
The book was mostly false, and the movie was highly based off the book, and that's mostly false, too.
I don't know how good a movie it is. Never seen it.
It's fine.
Number 9 is a bad movie.
What?
The Sandlot.
No! Oh, come!
It is it may be a cultural touchstone for you.
It is a cultural touchstone.
It may be important to you.
It is also a good movie.
It is a bad movie. Not interesting.
Nine, what's 8?
8 is Major League. That's too low.
That's far too low.
That is too low.
That's a top 3 baseball movie.
Absolutely, in my world, it is. It may have a case for my favorite
baseball movie. It is eminently rewatchable.
It's great.
Yeah.
Number 7 is The Bad News Bears.
I'd also have that higher.
Has not aged well.
It hasn't, but...
Really has not aged well.
I suppose, do I have to reevaluate where it's at because of 6 or 7 scenes?
As a product of its time, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
You got
to
judge things on the context of time.
Number 6 is wrong. The movie 42. Yeah, Jackie Robinson story.
That wasn't... I love Harrison Ford as much as the next guy, but that was weird. I don't know what he was doing.
He was growling.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it was that movie was bad. Number 5... And I'm on this one, Field of Dreams.
The first time you watch Field of Dreams, it gets you. It works. correct?
Yes.
Nobody watched that the first time and said, this is dreck. Everybody said, wow, what a movie. This is incredible.
Iconic sort of syrupy Americana.
And then I think, and that's the point of
corn
the movie.
Syrupy.
I mean, because
case.
Because it was made that way, that's what they were trying to do with the film.
It didn't offend.
But I could see watching that a number of times going, I'm over this now. I'm done with it.
Number four, also rewatchable and I think perfectly placed at four, A League of Their Own.
Terrific movie.
Terrific movie.
Terrific movie.
Fabulous performances, wonderful acting. Number three is The Natural. I think The Natural kind of sucks.
I think it sucks.
Oh, it's so boring.
It's so slow.
Boring. Nothing happens.
It takes three days to watch.
Nothing happens.
So slow.
And it's like every scene you can hear the director waiting for the light to be just right.
Not yet.
In too many scenes, it's the golden hour. It can't always be the golden hour.
And it's spawned. It's Redford's in the movie. He didn't direct it, right? No, Barry Levinson directed it. So that spawns every single one of Robert Redford's directorial efforts, which are also slow
and also all in the golden light
and slow.
Yes. Now I'm cool with number two and number one. Number two is Moneyball.
That's a great movie.
It is. And number one is Bull Durham.
As the best baseball movie of all time, I don't think I can have it at number one because I always end up fast forwarding through the Susan Sarandon scenes.
Why?
I guess not all of them.
Either. I forgot about them when I showed them. I forgot it's a love story that kind of has baseball in it.
It's kind of softcore, too.
They were getting into those scenes.
Yeah.
Yes, near the end of the movie, when she and Crash, you're right. It is like, okay, this scene can...
Isn't that where Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon fell in love? I mean, they got married after that movie and then spent 40 years together or whatever.
Correct.
20-something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the whole speech that Crash Davis gives about the things he believes in.
Yeah, I know.
It's
a place in my heart because it was filming when I was in college, and I have friends who were extras in the various scenes, and the director, Ron Shelton, was on campus a lot. It was really cool with the students. He would he'd gather people around him, or he'd say, look, I'm going to sit in this auditorium, come in and ask any questions. If you want to be an extra, we can put you in the back of this scene. He could not have been nicer.
That's cool. That is the Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Even though
it is in a brand new time spot.
Do I have to leave this for leftovers now?
Maybe that's something for leftovers. We have stuff to give away, though. We've got stuff.
Yeah, we do. We have an MLB Network prize pack that we're going to give away very, very soon. And at some point between now and noon, a pair of tickets to see the Black Keys and Modest Mouse at the United Center on July 27th. But next up, college basketball talk. It was quite a night. There was some great basketball. There was some unwatchable basketball last night. There was a little bit of both, and we'll find out what Brad Evans thought of all of it. You will want to hear the unique tones of Brad Evans. If you haven't heard him before, you're in for something.
He's next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, you're listening to the voice of the Chicago sports fan for over 25 years. Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers and the first ever Kona, taking Chicagoland by storm. This scoreboard update was brought to you by Art of Pizza on State Street. Stop in, carry out, or order delivery for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh, ready-to-go pizza slices from Art of Pizza on State Street, 727 South State Street.
A masterpiece in every slice, Art of Pizza.
Patrick Otto does this thing where they connect with their customers. When I first heard that, I thought, that's not even a thing. Nobody listens to customers anymore. Then I went to Patrick. They listened and gave me a great value. I guess it's a Patrick thing.
At Patrick Cadillac, lease a 2019 Cadillac XT5 for $399 a month for 36 months.
Taking care of you every day. That's the Patrick promise.
$19.95 down. Ultra low mileage. CTA vehicle. 10,000 miles per year. Stop 190.32.
Thinking about a good bottle of wine going into the weekend, then you better be thinking about Cameron Hughes and the unbelievable deals that you get at chwine.com, especially if you use the code SCORE, because that way you're able to drink spectacular wine at a fraction of the price, and you get a free sommelier corkscrew, and you get free shipping. A case of wine is like 50 pounds, and you know what shipping costs are to send something 50 pounds. Yeah, right now, zero. You pay zero to ship it right to your door, and the wines are insane. Here's an example. I enjoyed some of this last night, and I'm not screwing around here. I'm talking to you if you're a serious cab drinker. If you know, if I say 2016 Rutherford, you know what we're talking about here, the quality of this stuff. And this bottle retails at $125. That's retail for the bottle. This is something in a restaurant is going to be $225. And right now, the lot 663 is $35 for a five-star award-winning 90-point wine. 2016 Rutherford, it's 15.6% alcohol. This thing is massive. You got to decant 2 hours before you drink it. You got to let this thing breathe. This could sit another 15 years in your cellar. So get a case of it. Some for now, some for later. We're talking about that upfront plum, cassis, black cherry, mineral, and chocolate. The structure of this thing with the oak, graphite, and the tannins that are pulling everything like a black hole. And the finish goes on for seemingly ever. This is a special juice here. 663 2016 Rutherford from Cameron Hughes. You compare this at $125 from the original name vineyard, same wine, $35. Don't miss this. Go to chwine.com. That's chwine.com. Click the radio button. Enter the code SCORE. Free corkscrew, free shipping. If you're a serious cab fanatic, the lot 663 is an absolute must. As a wine drinker, it's going to change your life. Go to chwine.com, code SCORE.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This kid is, he's just one of a kind. You know, he's certainly a special basketball player, but as a youngster, he has a maturity. It's uncommon. It really is uncommon, and how humble he is, and how fresh, exciting. You know, he's exquisite. Yeah, just the best, and it's been an honor for me to be with him on this journey.
Easy there, big fella.
Get over it.
Just chill out, man. Mike Krzyzewski on Zion Williamson. We saw all kinds of basketball last night, a wide range of basketball from the sublime to the unwatchable, depending on what your tastes may be on the college hardwood. The Sweet 16 is a good one, as most of the seeds have held and everything is really competitive now. Here to talk about that is Brad Evans. You can find him on Twitter at Yahoo Noise. He of Yahoo Sports, College, and Fantasy. Also Altitude TV. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So where are you on the continuum, Brad? Did you find last night sublime, ridiculous, or both?
Well, it initially started as sublime, gentlemen, because we might have had arguably the game of the NCAA tournament between Tennessee and Purdue. One that flirted with triple digits for both sides. And then I had to call my optometrist because my eyes were bleeding those last two games. I hope you hammer the unders in both of those contests. That was the only redeeming quality of either one of those games, unless you had, say, Virginia, or if you had Texas Tech marching on in your bracket. Those were hideous contests.
Purdue-Tennessee was so much fun, and we were spent some time a little while ago trying to figure out what Rick Barnes was aiming at when he threw the ball twice, when he wanted his guys to throw the ball twice, yeah. And then got himself a shot opportunity with 0.1 seconds left. I don't get it, and I'm wondering if I'm missing something, Brad.
No, you're not missing anything. It's Rick Barnes got a Rick Barnes. Yeah. I mean, it's the curse that lives on, guys. You know, and that whole region was cursed to begin with. When you saw the draw, you saw Tony Bennett, of course, coming off the UNBC debacle of last year. And, of course, Virginia has survived in advance and moved on to Elite Eight, kind of buried some of those demons. Purdue, up until last night, Matt Painter and company hadn't gotten back to the Elite Eight since 2000. And now that is dead and buried. And then you look at Tennessee and Rick Barnes, where there is previous stops, particularly at Texas, a guy that just seems seemingly had ultra talented teams, but never could get over the top. And, you know, par was the course last night with Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, a valiant comeback effort. Really, they flipped the script, because remember against Colgate in Iowa, they had massive leads and in which they, you know, bled away. Last night, they were chasing a deficit. They were no longer the protector. They were the aggressor. And as a result of it, they pushed it, you know, in overtime. I thought they would put the Boilers away, but ultimately the steam engine kept on chugging, and that's why Carson Edwards, on a somewhat questionable foul, though a little derriere, got into the midsection of Edwards to force that game at OT.
Watching Gonzaga and FSU battle and battle and battle, and then eventually that's one of those where the cream rose to the top, and they just began to impose their will and choke them out. Gonzaga, when they get it going, I think it's hard to, or it's easy to start to underestimate the level of talent that they have, because a lot of us in the rest of the country just haven't seen them play enough.
Yeah, unless you're an insomniac like me and stay up at all godly hours of the night and watch Gonzaga basketball till 2 a.m. And look, this team has been uber talented all season long. You got a couple of NBA prospects, true blue guys, and Rui Hachimura and Brandon Clark. And Brandon Clark, guys, may be one of the most underrated big men in all of college basketball. He has more blocked shots this season than missed field goals. That's crazy to me. That's nuts. Not only that, but he had, you know, the 35 and 5 block game and the round of 32 against Baylor, joining the likes of Shaq and the Admiral. David Robinson is the only players in NCAA tournament history to do so in a box score. I mean, he is the guy that is really the grease that moves the engine here for this Gonzaga team to go along with Josh Perkins, who, by the way, played 35 minutes in that national title game a couple of years ago against North Carolina. Oh, let's not also forget about Kispert, who drains over 40% from downtown as a team. Gonzaga netting 1.25 points per possession. That is number one in college basketball. And now you're going to face the number one defense in terms of the efficiency data in college basketball in Texas Tech. And you know, that team has just been locked down. We saw last night, of course, against Michigan, holding him to a number that hadn't been done in an NCAA tournament game by the Wolverines since just after World War II in 1948, when the Nut Huggers and the Black and White and the medicine balls were being chucked around as means of basketball. So, you know, it's going to be an extraordinary game. But, guys, I fell in love with Gonzaga months ago in Maui, and the love has certainly percolated ever since.
All right, so I need you to fight through the bias then, percolate through the love. I'm wondering, because when I watched it, when I looked at the West and I made my bracket, I knew that I wanted Gonzaga and Texas Tech to be the matchup toward the end here, but I have no clue what style is going to be able to prevail here. What do you think is coming out of Gonzaga and Texas Tech?
Well, I think Texas Tech is going to control the tempo. Obviously, they want to keep it at a half court. They want to slow it down. They want to play rock'em sock'em robots with you, try to keep Gonzaga out of transition where it flourishes. But the thing is that the Zags can play at variable speeds. They're a team that has played slowdown basketball. They've been in some of these grinded out affairs. I think they just have too much size. With Hachimura, with Brandon Clark in particular, Killian Tilly as well, who looks like to be the Killian Tilly of old, there's too much length. There's too much athleticism. And the one thing you got to keep in mind here, as good as Texas Tech is, you know, they force a lot of turnovers, and Josh Perkins going to have to play a better game because he got his pocket picked multiple times by FSU last night. He's got to really squeeze the rock and protect it. But Tech is number 160 plus in offensive rebounding percentage and defensive rebounding percentage on the season. That is the advantage, the distinct advantage that the Bulldogs have. I picked them to win the national title way back in, I believe it was December. I've been sticking to my guns ever since. I am not jumping off that bandwagon now. The Zags will win. And more importantly, gentlemen, they will cover.
Ooh. Let's do a quick whip around of the games tonight. The early games, a 2-3 seed, Michigan State and LSU in the East. We've got North Carolina and Auburn, the 1 and the 5 in the Midwest. And then the late games in the East, it's the 1-4 Duke and Virginia Tech. Another 2-3 game in the Midwest, Kentucky and Houston. Go.
All right, LSU, Michigan State. The key to this game is who wins the offensive rebounding battle. LSU generates a second chance right around 37% of the time. Michigan State right around 34% of the time. If Sparty turns the ball over, it ain't gonna party. Give me the Tigers plus six in this one. I think they win straight up, guys. Let's go to Auburn, North Carolina. Can Auburn shoot itself into the round of eight? It's doubtful. As good as they've been, as brilliant as they've been from outside, Brown and company, UNC has the size. They can run with you in transition. They're going to neutralize some of those second chance opportunities that Okiki and friends really depend on. I think North Carolina rolls by double figures and covers the five and a half. Houston, Kentucky. Houston's been really kind of under the radar on the national scene for much of the year, despite a lopsided record just because they play in the American Athletic. The $64,000 question is, what will P.J. Washington bring to the table? I think he's going to be rusty. I think he's going to be limited in minutes. Houston has the bigs. They have the guard play in Corey Davis and Armani Brooks. I think they are going to get the best of Big Blue Nation. Kelvin Sampson marches an inch closer to the Final Four. Last time he was there was with Oklahoma in 2002. And the creme de la creme. The crown jewel of the night, gentlemen. Virginia Tech and Duke. The Dukies laying seven in this one. Can Duke actually hit threes like they did in the last game? They nailed 10 of them. You're going to see a lot of zone. You're going to see a lot of triangle and one from Buzz Williams. Kerry Blackshear is a dude. He's going to match up well against Zion Williamson. And not only that, but VT can really stroke it from distance, shooting over 39% as a club. Mark it down. Yes, I've been drinking since 6 a.m. Yes, it was stiff tequila pours. I'm taking the Hokies, not only the points, but ooh, straight up, they knock off Duke tonight in a shocker special.
You know the voice. He's Brad Evans at Yahoo Noise, Yahoo ooh, Sports, and Altitude Sports. Brad, I got to force you to an uncomfortable position here because,
ooh,
well,
I like that.
Mostly it's fun. You have Gonzaga as your team to win the tournament. But if I made you hedge, and I'm sure that's an anathema to you, but if you had to hedge with another team to win this tournament, who would you hedge with?
Okay, truth be told, gentlemen, I have some action on Texas Tech to win the whole enchilada at 50-1.
You don't.
I do. I got it back about mid-January. So that's where I'm hedging, right? And it's only appropriate that they're going to meet in the Elite Eight. So whoever wins that game, I will go on record and say that team will win the national title. That's where I will hedge my cash.
We got to watch Ryan Klein have a shooty white guy tournament game. Where does that one rank in the history of shooty white guy tournament games?
Oh, that's up there. Wow, that was just incredible. I mean, the shots he was pulling out of his keister were otherworldly. I mean, he was on a whole other plane and a whole other dimension. It was quite the performance with 7 trays out of 10 attempts, just searing fire out of every pore of his body in that game. And Carson Edwards was brilliant in his own right, too. Mm-hmm. Hitting some critical shots down the stretch. But yeah, that Ryan Klein performance was up there. In terms of like white dude performances, that was like Brian Cardinal elite status.
I was going to say Spike Albrecht is somewhere
in
there.
A big one,
Jimmer
yeah.
Fredette, obviously.
Oh, Jimmer, yeah, the Jimmer's like, he is the top. He's the guy that defines exactly what you're looking for.
Jimmer claps on the ones and the threes. Brad, what coach has made himself either the most upward mobile or the coach that has reinforced his position as top of the class here in the tournament?
Well, I think Bruce Pearl's bag man is going to have extra $100 bills in the bag.
Sure.
As a result of what's going on here. A guy that's certainly getting it done. I'm shocked to see Auburn in this position. Now, they dodge a bullet in their opening round matchup against the deepest team in college basketball, New Mexico State, who had a chance to win into the buzzer, and the guy pulled a Carlton from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air airballing. He'd even draw the exit sign. That's how bad it was in that one. But still, you know, they live to fight another day and have reaped considerable reward as a result of it. They're going to be humble tonight. But Bruce Pearl definitely on the upward trend. And Chris Beard, right? I mean, Chris Beard, is he the next great coach in college basketball? I would argue yes. His principles are genius. He coaches his kids up. They execute it flawlessly. He recruits to that system. If I'm UCLA, I give him everything. Everything you could possibly want, I throw it at him, and I still don't think he's going to leave Lubbock. I think he's satisfied. I think the dynasty ended for Kansas and Lawrence this season with Bill Self and the 14-year run of winning titles in that league. And I think the baton has been passed to Chris Beard, and he's going to build a dynasty in probably, in all places, Lubbock, Texas.
Kelvin Sampson deserves a mention here because
yes.
when I see Houston – getting this far in the tournament makes me feel like a kid again, because it's been a while. Used to be a fixture. Connor doesn't know from what I speak, but understanding that seeing guys like Michael Young and Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler and Guy Lewis with his ridiculous plaid jackets and his checkered towel, it was a thing, and he's done an amazing job taking a program from the wilderness back where it feels it needed to be.
Yeah, the expectation here, at least the rumors are, that he could land in Arkansas with Mike Anderson out there in Fayetteville. So that is a storyline to see unfold. You know, Houston's upgraded all their facilities. They pumped in millions of dollars. They are getting back to those glory days from the 1980s. So it's going to be an interesting dilemma, I think, for Kelvin Sampson. He's going to abandon what he's built there and in one of the largest cities in the country to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, just to play in the SEC. We will wait and see. But again, that's the scuttlebutt right now behind the scenes.
Love you, Brad. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Gracias, amigos. Mas tequila.
Brad Evans at Yahoo Noise. I told you he's a thing.
We need to send him booze.
I think he has plenty.
He's got enough.
Yeah.
I thought he just needed to level
he's
out.
Got a little bit of everything there. Yeah, send him whatever Matt Nagy's having before his press conference.
That's what he needs.
All right, Jonah Carey talks baseball. He's going to take a look at that first day, set things up for us. It's baseball season. 11 o'clock on Fridays. Get used to Jonah. He's next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.